May I have your attention, please? Smash your right one. May the peace of the Lord be with you today. I love you. My name is Samuel Deacon Yeshua Hawkins. I'd like to serve you forever as a priest I very soon. So now time to start finding your seats for Sam Simpson.
Shabbat Shalom, everyone. My name is Son of Future Labor, Barzillai Hawkins, and I would like to serve you forever as a priest starting very soon. It's now a great privilege and honor to present to you the sons and daughters of Future Labor now entering the sanctuary. It's now a great privilege and honor to present to you one of the sons of Future Labor, Ethan.
Shabbat Shalom. You may be seated. May a PCI be with each and every one of you. The tower of my speech is being unity by wearing the holy garment. Being in the house of Yahweh means keeping Yahweh's laws as taught in the house of Yahweh. One of these laws is wearing the holy garment. In the second book of Israel, chapter 30, verses 65, Pastor says, "There is one time wherever I brought a servant on the holy garments, and we lost 2/3 of the congregation at that time. I praise Yahweh that I was tested with that because I would never have been concerning his law. And I would never yield one to Satan, but Yahweh ever keep me from doing so. So we should never bend either. We should be in unity with the one sent through prophecy, as it says we need a teacher in Acts 8, verse 29 and 31. So if you could turn there, Acts 8. Acts 8, verse 29 to 31. 8. And it says, "Then the Spirit went, inspired Philip to go near this chariot. So Philip was running up to him and heard him reading the book of Isaiah and said, 'Do you understand what you're reading?' And he said, 'How can I unless someone guides me?' Then he asked Philip if he would sit with him." And that just there shows you how we need a teacher. So, how we need a teacher. Israel Hawkins is our guide. So we have to be in humble and in unity with him. In the 11th book of Israel, chapter 10, verses 19, Shawkin says, "These were the Catholics who, by the way, are getting letters of people who are saying, 'You know, you brought something out that I noticed a few years ago in the Catholic Church.' They know these things that, of course, Malachi Martin brought it out in the keys of this blood, that they call it their Aaronic priesthood, that their system dates back to it. If you notice, they try to wear the kippah. It's not that Yahweh saw that the kippah that the house of God designed. It was actually designed in the scriptures. If you read the book, Why the Holy Garments, they also wear the tallit, showing the red blood that they've shed from the saints. But they could still be forgiven. Yahweh said, 'Although your sins are scarlet, you can be forgiven. Come to the priests and do what the priests tell you to do, otherwise you won't.' The Pope wears what looks like a real kippah, but it's not real. You could only get a real kippah at the house of Yahweh." He also wears what looks like a tallit. It's scarlet red, but it's not real. You know, you only can get a real one at the house of Yahweh. This resembles keeping Yahweh's laws pertaining to the holy garment. But the Catholic Church is a counterfeit. The definition of counterfeit is made to look like an exact copy of something in order to trick people. Do you see this money? Does it look real? Kind of. Can you buy anything with it? Doesn't have any value. It's worthless. So going on in the 13th book of Israel, part 1, chapter 5, verses 65. That's before Yahweh gives us the power to take over the authority and then to take over. Then we have their full attention fully, and that's when we'll have their full attention. And that's when Yahweh says the laws will be obeyed and the quartet will repent. And even what's left of them, they will even start wearing the holy garments. So in conclusion, I encourage you to read the book from the house of Yahweh called Why the Holy Garment, so you won't be deceived by any counterfeit religions. And with that, I'll turn it over to the next speaker.
And now, it's a privilege and honor to present to you our first speaker, Son of Mission Level with Deacon White Buffalo.
Shabbat Shalom, everyone. You may be seated. May the peace of Yahweh be with each and every one of you. Today my topic is Come into Unity by Getting Your Face in the Book. And I wanted to present this to you today to show us how we can get our minds on Yahweh's laws and teach them. If you have your Book of Yahweh, or if your Bible is all you have, if you could turn to Deuteronomy 6, on page 152. Page 152. And let's look at verse 4. It says, Hear, O Israel, Yahweh is our Father, Yahweh is one. In unity. Verse 5 says, And you must love Yahweh, your Father, with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your might. This is the first of the two greatest commandments of all. The second is, You shall love your neighbor as yourself. Now on these two commandments rest all the law and the prophets. And these laws which I command you this day must be in your heart. And you must teach them diligently to your children. Notice that word must. And talk about them when you sit in your house, when you walk on the road, when you lie down, and when you rise up. You shall tie them as symbols upon your hand, and they shall be as a distinguishing mark in the eyes of everyone. Yahweh expects us to learn the law, but he not only expects us to learn his laws, but he expects us to teach it to others. Remember, first we have to learn what to teach, and then we can teach what we have learned. The only influences we should be letting into our minds are positive influences. Remember, the Peaceful Solution talks about positive and negative influences, just like you have positive and negative character. The only influences we should let into our minds are positive ones. We should not be on Facebook fooling around. We shouldn't even be on these places unless we have a job from the house of Yahweh to be doing there. And Facebook, praise Yahweh. Facebook has been mentioned many times, okay? And if you have any questions, I advise you to talk to your counselors. We should have our faces in the books. We should be studying. I looked this up in this beautiful program named Yisrael Hawkins Says. And right here, the second book of Yisrael, going on to perfection, chapter 23 and verse 87. It says, as being hears together with your wife of the pardon of life, that is eternal life, so that your prayers may not be hindered. Yes, we have to be very patient and long-suffering, like Yahweh himself. Notice, you can finally get to this one mind between husband and wife, child and daddy, mother and daughter, by not letting hatred come in. This is the important part. Listen closely. You do not let your mind be fed with hatred, gossip, or stuff like this. You come into unity by getting your mind on Yahweh's laws and teaching them. Yahweh says, talk of these things. Talk of my laws. And notice that word, remember I said to remember the word must that was in Deuteronomy 6. Must means it's a necessity. Yahweh doesn't say, if you feel like it, if you want to, or whether you approve of it. But Yahweh commands us to talk of his laws. It's a command. If we do that, it is counted to us as righteousness. Now I know many of us here know what the word righteousness means, but for those of you who may be listening or any newcomers that don't know what righteousness is or where it's found, if you can go one page over, that's page 153. Page 153. And it's Deuteronomy 6, and let's look at verse 25. It says, and it will be our righteousness if we observe to do all of this law before Yahweh our Father, as he has commanded us. Notice it says, it will be our righteousness if we observe to do all of this law. If we choose to keep his laws, it is righteousness. Let's look over to Psalms real quick. And let's look at Psalms on page 435. That would be Psalms 1. Blessed and joyful is the man. Let's look at verse 1 and 2. It says, blessed is the man who does not walk in the counsel of the unrighteous, nor who stands in the path of sinners, nor who sits in the seat of the scornful. But his delight is in the law of Yahweh, and in his law he meditates day and night. Not in man's counsels, but in Yahweh's law. He meditates day and night. This is what we should be doing, meditating on Yahweh's law. Keeping Yahweh's laws is righteousness. So guess what? If you would look to the back of your book of Yahweh, Yahweh's 613 laws on page 1b. The 248 positive commandments. Okay, let's look at positive law 11. It says, teach the book of the law to our children. So it's a law. Yahweh commands us to teach his laws. It's a law that we should teach his laws. Remember, Pastor said negative influences makes us be fed with hatred, gossip, and stuff like this. In conclusion, in the 13th book of Yisrael, gold, pure, fine gold, this is part 2 on page 54. This was a sermon given on 08-17-2013. It's chapter 6, and let's look at verse 72. It says, now in 2 Thessalonians 2, verse 1, he says, now we plead with you, brothers, concerning the coming of our King, Yahshua Messiah, and our gathering together to him. Pastor says, this is a gathering that is going to take place. There will be over 2 billion people gathered to Yahshua. Yes, and everyone will be teachers at that time, the apostle said. Everyone that makes it will be teachers, and they will invite everyone to sit under this vine, Yahshua. Under their own vine, which is Yahshua, and under the branch. Remember that? It says fig tree, but it's not. They'll sit under, they'll invite everyone, because everyone is going to be teachers at that time. And you will have no need of someone else teaching you, because you're going to be a teacher, or you won't be there. That's the thing. This is a one and only opportunity, and we better take it while it's here. That's all the time I have, and if you all please stand, it is my privilege and honor to turn it over to the great Kahn, Kiefer Hawkins.
Shalom, everyone. You may be seated, and may the peace of Yahweh be with each and every one of you. Take me a second to get all this stuff here. Praise Yahweh. We got a bit of a double blessing today. We got the new moon, and we got the Sabbath day. Praise Yahweh. You know, this is truly the greatest privilege, you know, that I know we say that a lot, that, you know, it's a privilege and an honor to speak before the called out ones of Yahweh, but it's something that can't be understated. You know, it's a privilege and honor to work with the called out ones in the house of Yahweh. You know, and Yahweh has given us, he's gathered us, as the great deacon that was just speaking had mentioned, you know, he gathered us to do this work. There's a great gathering taking place. It's actually two of them, and we're going to get into that more in the sermon. The title of my sermon today is Bound for the Crown. Bound for the Crown, and it's specifically geared towards us, because the world today is not bound for the crown. They're bound for the great river Euphrates, as we can see pretty clearly. And all the news events, the world is heading that direction, and they're being lured in that direction. We know the outcome, of course, because we've been taught the outcome. But I'd like to focus also on the direction we're going, because we have a gathering also, and a great gathering. You know, 2 billion people. If you think about that, that is a huge, huge number. So I wanted to start in the sixth book of Israel. This is the last chapter. There's actually 41 chapters in the sixth book of Israel. And I know you probably don't have yours with you today, but I'll just go ahead and read this. Chapter 41, verse 62 and 63. He says, but the book of Israel, brethren, it's a great book. Skipping down, he says, remember what Timothy said, and Shaul wrote to Timothy. He said, we're all competing for a crown. Now, we're not competing against each other, brethren. That's the way of the world. We're competing all together for this job. And I don't want any of you missing. We need every one of you in the house of Yahweh to be teachers forever. And if you're in the house of Yahweh, that has to be your goal. You know, you're not just here to collect dust. we were called here to do a work, and that work, you know, praise Yahweh, it involves physical, you know, work and a lot of it, but we also have to be practicing to become teachers, you know, because that is really what we were called here to do. And we have to get past any obstacle, any barrier that stands in the way of us and preparing for that work. In verse 63 says, but we're competing for a crown. Now, we don't run or bounce basketballs. We're not that kind of crown that we're competing for. We're competing to be able to teach the message. We're competing to be able to teach this message, which will bring peace to all the world, all the universe, and maintain that peace throughout eternity. That's the crown that we're looking to attain. You know, not the we get so sidetracked with all the things in this world, the riches and such. We know it's all perishing. Our focus has to be on the crown that we were called to receive. You know, and that's the one that we're just talked about. But you know, on the contrary, as he talked about in that sermon, we're not competing against each other. And it's very important that you always keep in the perspective the outlook of the other person. You know, it's real easy to get wrapped up in our own world and we don't think about the emotions, the feelings, what's taking place with the other individual that we're dealing with. And Yahweh's called us here to perfect that. You know, if you turn to 1 Corinthians 9:24. He says, do you not know that those who run in a race all compete, but only one receives the prize? Now, and again, that's not the case here in the house of Yahweh, that only one of us is going to get a prize and we have to knock each other out of the way to get to it. You know, Yahweh has before us a crown and he wants us to receive it. And the only thing that stands between it is us. You know, so run your race that you may lay hold of the prize and make it yours. And everyone who competes conducts himself temperately in all things. Now we compete to obtain, compete to obtain a perishable crown, but for us it's an imperishable crown. This is something that lasts forever. It's not a temporary, you know, thing that you work for and then you know, you're so excited and you get it home and it breaks. or you get it and somebody steals it. And you know, that's the way of this world. Nothing is forever in this world. And the things that people work for and that they put all their emphasis on they don't know if it'll be theirs tomorrow. You know, but when we compete for this crown and we do it according to the way that we've been taught in the house of Yahweh, we know that we're competing for something that is eternal. It never breaks. You know? The power that Yahweh wants to give us is beyond our imagination. But we're beginning to see glimpses of it. You know, when Pastor brings these things to our attentions, we could see little pictures of what it is that Yahweh actually wants to give to us. But in 1 Kefa 1, that is found on page 957. 1 Kefa 1, we look at, you know, a few of the things that we go through here in the house of Yahweh. He says, in this you greatly rejoice, though, now for a little while. Remember, in the big picture, what we're going through, this work is a very short work, and it's only for a little while. You know, we think that this is taking forever. look at how long the earth has been here. Look at how long Yahweh has been bringing this plan about. That, you know, this is a very, very short work in these last days. But he says, but now, just for a little while, you must suffer grief through manifold temptations, that the trial of your faith, which is much more precious than gold, which perishes, though it is tried with fire, might be found worthy of praise, honor, and glory at the appearing of Yeshua Messiah. And of course, that's what we have to have in our mind day in and day out here in the house of Yahweh. You know, we have to have that goal in our mind and always have the big picture in your mind, because people tend to get caught up, like I said, in their emotions, and stumble doing things that they know is not right because they get caught up in that moment. And we'll get into that a little bit deeper a little later. But in First Kefa, I just read that. Hebrews 12. Let's go to Hebrews 12 real quick. I got to get this in before. Hebrews 12. I was right next to it. And look at verse 13. He says, and follow the straight paths made for your feet. Now, and again, he's showing you that the way is already there. You don't have to carve your own way. The way is already here. It's before us. And he says to follow the straight path that is made for your feet, so that the lame may also be turned out of the way, out of the way that they were in. You know, we all came here lame. I know when we say lame, we think it's somebody who walks with a limp or something. No, we came here lame, unable to govern ourselves, unable to know right from wrong. We came here that way, and we, through following the straight paths that Yahweh's made for us, we are becoming healed. You know, we're attaining the things that Yahweh wants us to attain. We're actually reaching that goal. But it says in verse 14, and follow peace with all men and holiness, without which no one will see Yahweh. So, you know, we go through this because we could see we're in this time period. If you look at the news, if you understand prophecy, if you listen to the sermons, you know the time period that we're in. He said, you know, we can see that we're in this time period that soon we're going to receive these crowns. But we can't grow faint at this moment. This is the moment where we need to sprint. This is the end of the race. And any racer knows that at the end is when you put all your effort into completing and finishing that race. You know, that's when the race is won or lost 90% of the time. So, you know, the very things that our forefathers longed to see will soon be revealed to us. And many of them already have. If you look at just on the other side of the page there in Hebrews 11, and look at verse 13. It says, All these died in the faith, not having received the promises, but having seen from afar, they were convinced, and embraced them, and convinced and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. And if you look at verse 16, but now they long for a better kingdom, that is a heavenly. Therefore, Yahweh is not ashamed to call to be called their father, and he has prepared a city for them. You know, we're actually going to be able to resurrect these people and to show them that what they've been looking forward to all the life when they lived, they were looking forward to this moment. And, you know, if you think about it, the position that Yahweh has called us into in these end times, you know, is very remarkable that he's given us this opportunity to do so. I wanted to get into something that ties in with all this, because it's been on my mind for about 11 months now. It feels sometimes great to get something off of your mind that's been on your mind for 11 months. But of January this last year, a neighbor of mine, a great deacon in the house of Yahweh, he sent me a text on the phone. He was looking up at the sky and he saw some numbers in the clouds, and he sent me the picture. And I couldn't see it when he sent it to me. And then he kind of outlined it, and I said, you know, it's kind of interesting. It looks like his writing, you know, except that he would do, because the numbers are well. But let me see if I can get this for you. So the numbers there is 7196, and I'll lift up the sheet so you can you could see the outline, you know. And I know a lot of these things are hard to see, and especially, you know, when you see it in person, then you take a picture, and then it looks different on the picture than it does in person. But, you know, it was clear enough for him to see it and take the picture, and you could see, you know, from the outline where he got what he got. So anyway, he sends me the picture, you know, through a message. And, you know, I looked it up. 7196 is a very, very interesting word. And it goes with this sermon because it's showing a garment. I think I got the definition, but specifically something that's bound, something that the scriptures talked about it being either a wedding garment or a sash, and I thought that was interesting, especially at that time period. But it wasn't until a few months later when, you know, you got to go get your license plate renewed and all that, and mine came back with that number that I gave it a second look, you know, because they say, okay, well, now what are the odds, you know? So I saw that there's got to be something to it. So I went back and I looked at the date where he sent it to me, and it was on 1/22. He saw it on 1/20, and then he sent it to me on 1/22. The word 1/22, it's only mentioned six times in scriptures, and it's a Hebrew word. It shows the color red. So I went to go look for it in the scriptures to see, you know, if there might be something to this word. And if you turn to Zechariah, the great book of Zechariah 6, and this is one of the instances in which this, one of the six times that this color red word number 1/22 is used. And it's talking about four chariots. I'm in chapter 6 and looking at verse 2. It describes four chariots. And the first one, it says, the first chariot, it had red horses. And that's the color red that number was. Now, I really thought, now this was something, when I glanced up and saw the page number in the chapter on the top of the page there. Because if you notice, it's on page 719, and it's chapter 6. So I thought, okay, now now what are the odds? So I've been thinking that there's something, you know, and of course this whole chapter, the whole book of Zechariah is about this time period, you know, and right where it leaves off in chapter 5, it talks about the establishment of the house of Yahweh, right? And then it goes through, it shows the four chariots. And it's very interesting because if you follow what's going on in the news, you'll see actions from the quartet that, you know, I believe are being described right here. But also, if you look at 6 and verse 12, it's talking about, actually in verse 11, talking about the crowns given to our high priest, our overseer, and then in 14 he says, and the crowns will be to Halem, and Pastor's got a little side note here. He said the crown will be to the strong, the righteous ones who know Yahweh, the precious sons protected as an honor, as a remembering the memorial in the house of Yahweh. But remember that the crowns will be to the strong. How do we become strong? Do we come here strong? is it physical strength that he's talking about? Is it only the ones who are strong enough to pick up this crown? It'll be so heavy. No, you know, we gain strength here by what we read about earlier in going through the manifold of temptations and trials and all the difficult moments in our life, that when we endure, we gain strength. And as we gain strength, we help each other to make that same journey. You know, we see people struggle. You don't rejoice in their struggling and point fingers and laugh and say, aha, there's a guy that's struggling. You know, it's very far from the character of Yahweh. I remember, it must have been, I don't know, 12 years ago or something, that there was a situation where I had to call Pastor about an individual, and my attitude toward that individual, I was expecting Pastor to give me an answer like, you know, that guy, you know, because that's how I was looking at that individual. And, you know, I could hear like he was like broken in his voice. He was so sad at the information, you know, that I told him. And he said, you know, I always thought the world of that person, you know. And at that moment, I realized a couple things. I realized that the mercy of Yahweh was something that I didn't understand. And it also made me realize what a miserable person I was for even thinking, you know, that in my mind towards another person. You know, Yahweh makes his rain fall upon the just and the unjust. He shows mankind the way of their doings. And he says, you know, if you keep going this way, this is how it's going to come about. You know, this is what's going to take place. But he's always, he's always warning and pleading with mankind not to do the wrong thing. And, you know, in the house of Yahweh, we have to be that way towards each other. I wasn't expecting all that. But, you know, sometimes it's the little things that we say that can be very hurtful towards each other. And, you know, when we get impatient, you know, we might be in line waiting to get something. Because, you know, us men, we're always eating. And thankfully, we have a determined, awesome bunch of people that prepare things for us. Well, we get, sometimes a little bit grumpy and grouchy, you know. But think, put yourself in a position to where you had to go to work that day, but you, man, your back is hurting, you know, your legs are hurting, your arms are hurting, your head's hurting, everything's hurting, but you know you have a job to do. And you come to the house of Yahweh to do your job, and then you have somebody griping on you at the other end, you know. It's not a position we want to be in, you know. We weren't called here to tear each other down. We were called here to help build each other up. And I know we all need reminders, you know, because when we get in those moments where we're, you know, we're in a hurry and we're grouchy and blah, 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 you know, we forget all that. We know it right now when we're sitting here in this room, you know. But after 20 phone calls and not sleeping and not eating, and then, you know, at that moment, that's when we need the help. And sometimes, you know, when we lash out like that, we need the help of the individuals around us to kind of help put us back in our place and to show us, you know, hey, that attitude is not of Yahweh. You know, you need, I know you're stressed. You know, we have sympathy, we have empathy for each other. And that includes when we get in those types of moments. But, you know, we have to, it takes a cool head to talk down a situation. You see what's taking place in the world. There's no cool head amongst the leaders of this world. They're all falling for a trap. They're caught in a vortex that is leading towards nuclear war, and they can't see a way out of it. You know, we have that example, and it shouldn't ever, ever, ever be here. You know, because that's not the kingdom of Yahweh. It's not what the kingdom of Yahweh is about. So, but I did want to, but before I get into this, I wanted to cover a couple things. If you look at 1 Kefa, let's turn back to 1 Kefa. 1 Kefa 2. 1 Kefa 2:20. I had a light go out last night, and I was using my phone to light the the books so I could see. 1 Kefa 2 and verse 20, he says, knowing this first, that no prophecy of Scripture is of any private interpretation. And I wanted to kind of talk about this for a little bit because, you know, Yahweh's done miraculous and awesome things in these last days. And please be turning to Galatians 1. He's done really remarkable things that you can't just explain away and say, you know, well, sure, anybody could do that, you know. No, the magicians of the world have nothing, that no power even close to what Yahweh can do. And he's showing that. He's showing that great power. And, of course, the crown that we're speaking of, it's the power that Yahweh wants to give to us. Okay, but we have to remember a few things in what we just read there in 1 Kefa, and then in Galatians 1, look at verse 8. He says, but even if we or a Moloch of heaven should preach a message other than what we preach to you, you know, may that person be accursed. As we have already said, so I now say it again. If any man preaches any message to you contrary, you know, don't get into a trap of following things that are contrary to what you've been taught in the house of Yahweh. I don't care, you know, I don't care what, you know, if the numbers make sense to you, or even if you've seen something in a cloud or something that seemed miraculous. I don't care if a Malachim came straight from heaven or up there, came down next to you, and if he tells you to do something contrary to what you've heard here, that message is not from Yahweh. Okay, so we've got to get that in our mind, that we can't just, you know. So I was at the store today, and you know, I looked at my receipt, and it had these numbers, so that means I should do this, my odometer said this, so I'm trying to find out if I should go to HEB or Walmart today. It's not a personal thing like that. Yahweh brings things out to his house. He makes things known to us, and it's always for the work. It's not to upbuild any individual or to try to, you know, guide decisions in a person's everyday life like that. It's not for that purpose, you know. So I know it's easy sometimes to read into things a little bit more than what's there. But always use that guideline. And even with you know what I bring today, it's like I mention it because it's beyond, in my mind, it's beyond a reasonable amount of circumstance that something like that takes place. But more importantly, because it pointed me in a direction of Scripture with which something that's already been taught and established in the house of Yahweh that we need refresher on. You know, we need to know and understand these things. So I wanted to make that point clear that, you know, don't get caught up making decisions based on those types of things. You know, come to the house of Yahweh, learn from the house of Yahweh. The house of Yahweh will teach you how to make right decisions. That's what we've been established to do. I mean, that should be enough said on that topic, but back in Zechariah, you know, remember Pastor said 2 weeks ago that Russia is part of the quartet. But if you remember, he said it right at the end of the sermon. He said, Russia is part of the quartet, but they're not going along with it. They're not going along with, so you see the house divided is what he was pointing towards. And I want to say that just concerning what's written here in Zechariah 6, because you have four chariots identified. You have one that's got red horses, a second one with black horses, a third one with white horses, and a fourth chariot that has dappled and bay horses. So, but then when it goes to list the actions of these chariots, one is no longer mentioned. And I thought that's interesting, you know? The red one doesn't have any mention outside of verse 2, which says it exists. Now notice that it comes in a time period. This takes place in a particular time period. And verse 1 talks about two mountains. Okay? You know, I'm going to put it out there. Afterwards, you see two of these chariots going together, the black and the white. And now here's another interesting thing, is that in verse 3, the dappled and bay horses are mentioned together. Then afterwards, as it progresses, they're mentioned doing separate things. So, you know, when we look at the events that have been taking place since the establishment of the quartet, you can see, you know, some of the things that you know, I believe that are being shown here, but You know, I would never come out and say, you know, thus Yahweh says, unless Pastor Israel Hawkins told me to. I'm not interested in giving my own opinion on anything. But, you know, what's showed here is definitely clear that it's talking about this time period. And it's talking about, the, you know, the quartet, as you could see in some of the side notes there. But in verse 11, he says, now take silver and gold and make crowns. So it's in this same time period. Make crowns upon the head of Yahshua, son of Yahweh, the high priest, and speak to him. In verse 12, speak to him and say, this is what Yahweh of hosts says. Behold the man whose name is the branch, for he will branch out from his place and he will build the house of Yahweh. Yes, he will build the house of Yahweh and he will bear the glory and will sit and rule on his throne. He will be a priest upon his throne and the council of peace will be between them both. This council of peace is very important. But before we get to that, I wanted to cover the word crown. The word crown is number 5849 that's mentioned right there. And it mentions, I brought my Strong's, but I think I'll go ahead and try to cover that. 5849 in the Hebrew, because it shows something else in this word crown that we need to understand. And I know that's small writing for you, but it's highlighted here. The word 5849, and it means to encircle, but it also means for protection. So remember, what's offered here in the house of Yahweh is protection. You know, and this ties in very much with what we know in Colossians 2. If you turn there really quick. You know, because I'm bringing this all into your mind for a reason. That we're fixing to see a lot of things take place. And we're going to be, you know, things will try to sway you one direction or another. Never forget where your protection is. You know, never forget what Yahweh's offering us here in his house. In Colossians 2, and then look in verse 17. Actually, let's read verse 16 first. He says, therefore, let no man condemn you for doing these things, for eating and drinking in observance of a feast day, a new moon, or a Sabbath day. We got two of them, like I said, today. Don't let anyone condemn you for these things, because, look, they are a shadow from the things to come. There's going to be a separation, and Yahweh is going to show his power over, and he's going to do it. He's going to do it in these last days with this group right here. So, you know, I would be wanting to make sure, you know, that I'm in this place. Don't let anything stop you from coming to the Sabbath, from coming to the feast. You know, and I know many people are in foreign countries and they can't get here. But, you know, do whatever you can. And we continue to pray, because we know that Yahweh has a work for those individuals also. Revelations 9:14. I just wanted to show that also after that scripture in Zechariah. And I know I mentioned this at the beginning, that we're bound to different things. Here in the house of Yahweh, you know, we're like I said, we're bound for this crown. And I'll explain that a little bit more. But in the world, in Revelations 9:14, you can see that the four angels is the way it reads there, but we know that's the four messengers, the quartet, who are bound for the great river Euphrates. If you look at a map and you look and map out where the great river Euphrates is, just like Pastor showed us, how in the world did he know that specific this long ago? You would have to be an idiot to not know that this is obviously brought about by a being that has much more insight than any of these, you know, talking heads in the world today. You know, that they're all being tricked into this fourth part of the world. But if you look at the great river Euphrates, it starts where? Turkey? Syria? Iraq? You know, where is it all right now? Where, and it's not just Russia and the United States there now. Not everybody's there. You got the UN sanction. You know, all the quartet is there. Britain last week started their own bombing campaign. Remember that, and I'll say this. Remember that Britain and the United States used to be, you know, totally inseparable on every single action that they've ever done. Now, recently, and I'm not saying that they're enemies, but recently they've kind of done a little bit of their own thing. And think about that, you know, when you're going back and reading there in Zechariah. But to continue on here with the sermon, you know, Yahweh shows how to turn all this around. If you look to Proverbs 22, found on page 510 of your book of Yahweh. Proverbs 22. Because this is, you know, we talked about this in the book of Israel. It's actually a maintenance that we're going to do in the house of Yahweh forever, you know, throughout the universe, throughout all eternity. We're going to be teachers forever, and we're going to teach people to maintain that positive character that we're building, that we're learning, you know, every week here in the house of Yahweh. But Proverbs 22:14 shows that foolishness is bound in the heart of a child. But notice, the rod of correction will drive it far from them. Okay, so, you know, that works with all of us. That works with all of us. If we stay here and endure in this house and we continue to go through the correction that we're offered here in this house, you know, we will continue to grow. With that foolishness will be driven from us. You know, it's only when we don't accept it. It's only when we get to the point where, you know, as it's spoken, that root of bitterness gets within us and we want to reject the instruction. Then, you know, we can't be taught. But this definitely applies for the world. You know, it's bound in their heart. But the rod of correction, what comes forth from the house of Yahweh, can change it. It can turn this thing around. Now, we know from prophecy that they'll continue and they won't repent until a certain set of circumstances have taken place. That's not going to stop us from trying, is it? You know, it's not going to stop us from doing the work. Nothing is going to stop the house of Yahweh from doing the work it was commissioned to do in these last days. You know, and that's an exciting thing because it's each and every one of us that it involves in getting this work accomplished. But let's look at Exodus 13 real quick. You can see the clock is ticking. Exodus 13. We see what, you know, and this was mentioned again, you know, recently, but we see where Yahweh brought us from. He said, and Moshe said to the people, remember, this is Exodus 13 and verse 3. And Moshe said to the people, remember this day in which you went out of Egypt, out of the house of bondage, for by strength of the hand of Yahweh brought you out of it. Okay, so we have to remember Yahweh brought us out of this house of bondage. This bondage that is being shown there, you know, it's word 5650. It comes from 5647. It also means a tiller. It's the same word that was describing Cain there in Genesis 4 or 3 that says that Cain was a tiller of the ground. It's the same characteristic there that's being shown. It's remember Romans 6:16 in that you are a servant to whoever it is that you obey. So once we've been called out of this house of bondage, we have to be very diligent to maintain ourselves to never return that way again. You know, and like I said earlier, it's not just ourselves. We have to make sure that we're all walking that straight path that we talked about earlier, the one that was made for our feet. You know, because there's so many things in this world that want to try to, you know, pull you away from it. But it's very exciting, you know, to be in this time period right now and to see the things taking place in the house of Yahweh and in the world and to know that we're right there. You know, all we have to do is endure a little bit longer forever. You know, no, this is not going to go on forever, but we, you know, we have to endure forever. But back to Colossians, let's look at verse 3, chapter 3 real quick. Colossians 3. Look at verse 5. He says, therefore, put to death the evil passions lurking in your members, which are on the earth. And it lists them, the fornication, the uncleanness, the passions, the unholy desires, all greed, covetousness. It is on account of these things. It's on account of these things. We could see these things prevalent in the world, and it's on account of these things that we see all the hatred in the world today. So, you know, when we look at that, we have to be all the more diligent to get that out of our own character. In verse 8, he says, but now you must also put away all these from your mouth, anger, rage, malice, blasphemy, and filthy language. Be careful of the way you speak to one another. You know, I had mentioned previously in another sermon that Yahweh will make this house prominent. Think about that when you speak to each other. You know, think of that individual as being somebody very prominent. You know, and it'll help you to guide you in your conversation and the way that you address people. You know, I look forward to a kingdom where, you know, there's no people up here and people down here. And you know, there's always going to be positions and high positions, you know. But what I mean by that is by the way people treat each other. Nobody, I don't care what they do, should ever be treated with disrespect. And to be made to feel like they don't matter. And we have to remember that in our conversations with each other and the way that we deal with each other. You know, because this all ties into attaining the crown that Yahweh has set before us. Okay, so keep your mind on the goal, and it'll help for you to focus. You know, help you, when you see where you're going, it helps you to put things into perspective. But I'd just like to say that, and reminding everybody in closing that you know, we got a lot ahead of us, and we have a lot to look forward to, and we need everybody in the house of Yahweh working together to get it done. So praise Yahweh. If you all please stand at this time. I have an awesome privilege to present to you an awesome priest in the great house of Yahweh, the great Kohan David Hawkins.
Shabbat shalom, everyone. It's truly an honor and privilege to address the called out ones of the house of Yahweh. You may be seated. If you could turn in your books of Yahweh, we're going to be spending quite a bit of time today in Daniel chapter 8. So if you want to turn to Daniel chapter 8, it's page 680 in your books of Yahweh. I'd like to begin reading verses 13 and 14 in Daniel chapter 8. Then I heard one saint speaking to another saint, and another saint said to the one that spoke, how long will be the vision concerning the daily sacrifice, the setting up of the Lord of heaven, and the surrender of the sanctuary, and the host to be trampled underfoot? And he said to me, for 2,300 evenings and mornings, and then the sanctuary will be cleansed. So what does it mean, the sanctuary will be cleansed? Is this talking about a great mop night finale here in the house of Yahweh? Is this talking about the Greek king who invaded Jerusalem, the land of Judea, in 170 years before Yeshua was born, and he slaughtered pigs on the temple altar and sprinkled their blood and pork fat and desecrated the buildings? Is that what this is talking about and the cleanup they had after that? I'd like to begin with this overhead. Daniel served in the Babylonian kingdom, and in chapter 2, Daniel interpreted the dream for King Nebuchadnezzar. In fact, he also told him what the dream was. And in that dream, Nebuchadnezzar had seen a great image. And Daniel gave this explanation to King Nebuchadnezzar. He said, the first kingdom you saw was the king of Babylon, which Daniel served, King Nebuchadnezzar, in the kingdom of Babylon, the head of fine gold. The second kingdom, the Medes and the Persians, was the breast and arms of silver. The third kingdom, the kingdom of the Greeks, the stomach and bronze and thighs of bronze. And the fourth kingdom, the Roman kingdom. And you can see the dates there. And the Roman kingdom continues to this very present day, this Roman system. Daniel described it as the legs of iron and the feet, part iron and part clay of this great image. So those four kingdoms, I wanted to get that in your minds here. And now if you turn to Daniel chapter 8, verse 1. In the third year of the reign of King Belshazzar, a vision appeared to me, Daniel, after the one that had already appeared to me. And I saw in the vision, now Daniel's vision occurred in the year 539 before the Common Era, BCE. And Daniel says, it seemed to me as I looked, and I was at Susa, the citadel, which is in the province of Elam. And in the vision, I saw that I was by the river Ulai. Then I lifted my eyes, and behold, and looked, and behold, standing beside the river was a ram which had two horns, and the two horns were high, one, but one was higher than the other, and the higher came up last. What Daniel saw was the Medes and the Persian kingdom. The Medes came up first, then the Persians. The Persians were the strongest. The Medes and the Persians were the second kingdom. So Daniel, verse 4 here, 8 verse 4, and I saw the ram pushing westward, northward, and southward, so that no beast could stand before him, neither could any deliver out of his hand, and he did according to his will and became great. So this ram was the second kingdom, the kingdom of the Medes and the Persians. And verse 5, but as I was considering, behold, a he-goat came from the west across the face of the whole earth without touching the ground, and the goat had a notable, in other words, conspicuous and remarkable, horn between its eyes. So this he-goat was the third kingdom, which was coming on the scene, the kingdom of the Greeks. The notable horn was Alexander the Great, who became king of Greece and began to conquer in 336 BCE. He became king at the age of 20 when his father was assassinated. In verse 6, and the he-goat came to the ram, the Medes and the Persians, that had two horns, which I had seen standing beside the river, and ran toward him, toward the ram, in the fury of his power. And I saw that as he, the he-goat, advanced upon the ram, the Medes and the Persians, that he was moved with rage against him and gave it such a blow that it broke off the two horns, and there was no power in the ram to stand before him. But he threw him down to the ground and trampled upon him, and there was none that could deliver the ram from his hand. So Alexander the Great defeated the Persians in 333 BCE in the Battle of Issus. It's also interesting to note there that in the temple brochure, Pastor talks about the destruction of the city of Tyre, the prophecy. Alexander, 1 year later, Alexander the Great was the one who destroyed the city of Tyre in 332 BCE. So verse 8 here, therefore the he-goat, Alexander, grew very great, and when he was strong, the great horn was broken. Alexander he became king at the age of 20. He died at the age of 32. He fought battles the entire time, never lost a battle. And in the end, the historians believe that he was given poison, a slow-acting poison, and he died at the age of 32. In his place of it, four notable ones came up toward each of the four winds of heaven. So Alexander died in 323 BCE. Alexander's four generals fought among themselves and finally divided the territory by 301 BCE. And notice in verse 9 here, "And out of one of them came forth a little horn, which grew exceedingly great toward the south, toward the east, and toward the land of beauty." So historians want you to believe that the little horn was one of Alexander's generals. But we know that the little horn is really the mouth speaking great things that we read about in Daniel chapter 7 and verse 8. And I'd like to read that, Daniel chapter 7 and verse 8, because it's the same little horn. Daniel 7 and verse 8, "And I considered the horns, and behold, there came up among them another little horn, before whom there were three of the first horns plucked up by the roots. And behold, in this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking great things." Okay? Now, this next overhead here, I'm going to read through this. We just read 9. I'd like to read it again. And I'll read 10, 11, and 12. Explain it a little bit later. So, verse 9. "And out of one of them came forth a little horn, which grew exceedingly great toward the south, toward the east, toward the land of beauty. And he grew great up to the host of heaven." Now, understand, this is the vision that Daniel saw. "And it cast down some of the host and of the stars to the ground and trampled upon them. Yes, he magnified himself as high as the prince of the host, and by him the daily sacrifice was taken away, and the place of the sanctuary was cast down, and the host was given him against the daily sacrifice by reason of transgression, and it cast down the truth to the ground, and it practiced and succeeded." Now, historians want us to believe this following historical event. I'd like to read this from Wikipedia, just to give you a perspective of what where historians believe that the fulfillment of this prophecy in Daniel and the sanctuary being cleansed. So this is from Wikipedia, titled "The Maccabean Revolt." The Greeks, now notice, four generals divided Alexander's territory. One of them was the Seleucid dynasty. Seleucus I was the first general and king there, I believe. And he got the eastern part of Alexander's empire, Syria to India, which included Israel. He tried to impose Greek culture and universal religion on the conquered lands. The Hellenistic Jews, that simply means those Jews in Jerusalem, Israel, that believed Greek teachings. That's what Hellenistic Jews means. Requested the help of the Seleucid Empire. They wanted to force the new Greek beliefs and practices on the pious Jews. Antiochus IV, who was the Greek king here, marched on Jerusalem. So this is nothing more, understand, than an early crusade. This is really, if we'll read what he did, you'll see that it was another crusade, one of the early ones. Antiochus IV marched on Jerusalem in 169 B.C., 169 years before Yahshua was born. So, and this is what he did after he destroyed Jerusalem. The temple in Jerusalem was dedicated to Zeus. Antiochus IV stripped the sanctuary of all of its treasure. He killed thousands. He plundered Jerusalem. He exiled many as slaves. He outlawed the Sabbath. You know, they hate the Sabbath. They hate the Sabbath and circumcision, and desecrates the temple. The Jews were forced to erect pagan altars and offer swine's flesh on the altars, sprinkled swine's blood on the sanctuary, in the sanctuary, and ordered Jews to surrender every copy of the scriptures. How many times has Pastor told us that what they want to do is control the scriptures to take them out of the hands of the people? Take out the laws and the words of the prophets. And see, he did the same thing here in 169 BCE. Surrender every copy of the scriptures to be burned. Antiochus offered swine's flesh on the temple altar and suspended all Jewish sacrifices. Eventually, the Maccabeans joined forces with the Hasidim and revolted and drove him out of Judea and return to their religion. So Christian and Hebrew commentators, in fact, Hanukkah Hanukkah comes from this very time in Jewish history where, you know, events that occurred here are the reason the Jewish world celebrates Hanukkah today. So Christian and Hebrew commentators erroneously believe that this event fulfilled Daniel 8, verses 11 through 14. Actually, before I go to this overhead here, but there's two historical and scriptural reasons why the Greek army's invasion of Jerusalem in 169 BCE did not fulfill Daniel 11 to 16, verses 11 to 16. The first is Yahweh was not being worshipped in the temple in 169 BCE. If you remember the words of Jeremiah 23, verse 11, which were written about 600 years before Yahshua, where Jeremiah said in verse 11, "For both prophet and priest are profane, yes, even in my house, I have found their wickedness," says Yahweh in verse 14. "I have also seen in the prophets of Jerusalem a horrible thing. They commit adultery and walk in lies. All of them are like Sodom to me and her inhabitants like Gomorrah." So that's one reason that this invasion of Jerusalem did not fulfill this Daniel's prophecy. The other one is, we're going to read that the vision that Daniel had was for the last days, for this time period, not for a time 150 years after Alexander the Great. This is the layout, if you want to call it that, of Daniel chapter 8. The first 12 verses, which we read, are the vision which Yahweh gave to Daniel. Verses 13 through 19, Daniel is speaking to the man of Yahweh. And actually, this is a continuation of the vision. It's a continuation of the vision. And in verses 20 to 25, the man of Yahweh gives Daniel the interpretation of the vision. And again, it's a continuation of his vision. And then the last two verses, Daniel didn't understand the vision. But before we go to Daniel's speaking to the man of Yahweh, if you just turn over a couple pages to Daniel chapter 12, I'd like to read verses 5 through 7. Now, Pastor has taught us these verses, and he has shown us that these verses pertain to the house of Yahweh, pertain to the two witnesses. So I'd like to read Daniel 12, verse 5. "Then I, Daniel, looked, and behold, there stood two others, one on this side of the bank of the river, and the other on that side of the bank of the river. And one," now I'm going to give this first one here, I'm going to give him a name. I'm going to call him Jacob Hawkins. "And one, Jacob Hawkins, said to the man in linen," and I'm going to give him a name, Yisrael Hawkins, "who on that future day is teaching," this present day is what he's speaking of, "how long," and notice, Jacob is asking Yisrael a question, "how long will it be to the end of these wonders?" "Then I heard the man, Yisrael Hawkins, clothed in linen, who on that future day is teaching, when he," Yisrael Hawkins, "held up his right hand and his left hand toward heaven and vowed by him, Yahweh, who lives forever, that it will be for a time, times, and a half, when Yahweh will have accomplished pouring out his power through his holy people. At that, all these things will be finished." Okay, so now if you see the note there at the bottom of that overhead, note in Daniel chapter 12 here, verses 6 through 7, Jacob Hawkins is asking Yisrael Hawkins the question, and Yisrael Hawkins is giving the answer. This is consistent with the format of the question and answer radio program that originated from Eastland, Texas in 1962. Okay, so let's put some faces to Jacob and Yisrael Hawkins here from the Prophetic Word magazine, February 2011. In the upper right-hand corner, you see Jacob Hawkins, one of the two witnesses, And in the center of the magazine there, Yishrael Hawkins, Yahweh's Last Days Witness, and up along the side there, the two witnesses, and at the bottom, you see their names, Jacob Hawkins and Yishrael Hawkins, okay? So we see their names in Daniel chapter 12. Now let's go continue in Daniel chapter 8. So now, then verse 13 here, this begins where Daniel is speaking to, we'll see who he's speaking to here. In Daniel, I've titled this one, "The Sanctuary Will Be Cleansed." Verse 13, "Then I heard one saint," and I'm going to give that saint a name. I'm going to call him Yishrael Hawkins, speaking, and another saint, I'm going to give him the name Jacob Hawkins, said to the one that spoke. Now notice, Jacob Hawkins is asking the question, and he said, "How long will be the vision concerning the daily sacrifice, the setting up of the Lord of heaven, and the surrender of the sanctuary and the host to be trampled underfoot?" And verse 14, "And he," Yishrael Hawkins, "said to me," Daniel, "for 2,300 evenings and mornings, then the sanctuary will be cleansed." Okay, this next slide. 2,300 days represents 2,300 years. From 338 BCE, which was the end of the Medes and the Persian kingdom, and Alexander the Great coming on the scene, from that year, 338 BCE, to 1962 is 2,300 years. In Yekezkiah chapter 4 and verse 6, Yahweh inspired Yekezkiah to write, "I have appointed you each day for a year," which means one day represents 1 year. One day represents 1 year. So Daniel saw a time period from Alexander the Great, 2,300 years into the future, a time period called the Last Days. The 2,300 years begins in the year 338 BCE and ends in 1962. In 1962, mankind was poised to destroy the earth through a nuclear holocaust between the United States and the Soviet Union over the Cuban Missile Crisis. The year 1962 was the same year that Yahweh's two witnesses began ministering together. The beginning of the witnesses ministering together was the start. It was the start of the process of cleansing the sanctuary. Yahweh held back the nuclear wars at that time. Satan tried to destroy mankind before Yahweh's last day's work could be established. Yahweh is in complete control of his plan. Yahweh held back the nuclear wars at that time until the time, as Daniel 12 verse 7 says, when Yahweh will have accomplished pouring out his power through his holy people, all things will be finished. This next overhead here, Daniel 8 verse 15. So this is the continuation of Daniel speaking to the man of Yahweh. "When I, Daniel, had seen the vision and was searching to understand the meaning, then behold, there stood before me one having the appearance of a man." And I'm going to give this one having the appearance of a man the name Yishrael Hawkins. In the King James Version, it says Gabriel. Okay, now, Pastor has said that it's not the messenger coming down from heaven. It's the authority that comes down from heaven to Yahweh's one who he has sent, his prophets, his witnesses. So this Gabriel, this man of Yahweh, is Yishrael Hawkins. And I'm going to show you that the scriptures prove that the one that Daniel was speaking to here was Yishrael Hawkins. Verse 16, "And I heard a man's voice." Now, this is Jacob Hawkins again. This is Jacob Hawkins, a man's voice, "between the banks of the river Ulai, which called out and said, "Man of Yahweh, Yisrael Hawkins, make this man Daniel understand the vision." And now you see the note there on the overhead. In this vision, Jacob Hawkins is instructing Yisrael Hawkins to show Daniel the answer. This is consistent with the format of the question and answer program that originated from Eastland, Texas. Jacob Hawkins asked the questions, and Yisrael Hawkins answered the questions. So the next overhead here, the vision belongs to events that will take place in the time of the end. Daniel chapter 8, verse 17, "So he," Yisrael Hawkins, "came near to where I, Daniel, stood. And when he," Yisrael Hawkins, "approached, I, Daniel, was frightened and fell down upon my face. But he," Yisrael Hawkins, "said to me, 'Daniel, understand, O son of man, Daniel, for the fulfillment of the vision belongs to events that will take place in the time of the end.'" This is the time of the end, as we all know, the last days. Now, and so the cleansing of the sanctuary that's being talked about here is for the last days. Verse 18, "Now as he," Yisrael Hawkins, "was speaking to me, Daniel, I was in a deep sleep with my face toward the ground." But notice what Yisrael Hawkins does for Daniel. "But he," Yisrael Hawkins, "touched me, Daniel, and set me upright on my feet." This right here, if you see that note there, this is a prophecy showing that Yisrael Hawkins will resurrect Daniel from the deep sleep of death in the last days. So this is the scriptural proof that Daniel, in his vision, is seeing the last Yahweh's two witnesses in these last days. So verse 19 here, "And he," Yisrael Hawkins, "said, 'Behold, I, Yisrael Hawkins, will make you, Daniel, know what will be in the last end of indignation, for at that time appointed the end will be.'" So now Yisrael Hawkins is going to show Daniel the interpretation. But before we go there, I'd like you to look at this word deep sleep. Daniel was in a deep sleep. He was in the deep sleep of death in his vision. Yisrael Hawkins resurrected him. Now, in the King James Version, Daniel 8, verse 18, "Now as he was speaking with me, I was in a deep sleep on my face toward the ground, but he touched me and set me upright." So the word deep sleep there is Hebrew word 7290, and it means to stun, that is, stupefy with sleep or death. So, you know, Daniel saw his own resurrection in this vision. Now, this next overhang here, overhead, I've already read verses 3, 6, and 7. I'm not going to read those again. But I will read the interpretation there, verses 20 and 21. "The ram which you saw, which had two horns, are the kings of the Medes and the Persians. And the he-goat is the king of Greece. And the great horn that is between his eyes is the first king, who was Alexander the Great." Now this is the man of Yahweh explaining all this to Daniel. Again, we've already read 8 and 9. I'd like to read 21 and 22. "And the he-goat is the king..." Oh, I need to change this page too. Okay. Yes, okay. "And the he-goat is the king of Greece, and the great horn that is between his eyes is the first king, Alexander the Great." Verse 22, "Now because it broke off," this great horn broke off, "Alexander died, and whereas four stood in its place, his four generals who fought with one another and finally took over, divided his kingdom into four parts, four kingdoms will stand up out of that nation, but not with the same power that Alexander the Great had." And one of those four kingdoms was the one that destroyed Jerusalem in 169 B.C. Now, on this overhead, we're going to read both the vision and the interpretation, because the vision is color-coded to the interpretation. So in Daniel 8, verse 9, the red letters, "And out of one of them came forth a little horn, which grew exceedingly great toward the south, toward the east, and toward the land of beauty." And then let's read the interpretation that the man of Yahweh gave to Daniel. "And in the last days of their kingdom, when the transgressors have reached their fullness, the king of fierce expression and understanding great dark sentences, skilled in trickery and deception, will stand up." So notice the little horn in Daniel's vision. The man of Yahweh is explaining that this is the king of fierce expression. And when is he going to stand up? In the last days. Okay, now look at 10, the blue lettering there. "And it grew great," this is the vision, "up to the host of heaven and cast down some, and the host of the stars to the ground and trampled upon them." And then verse 24 there, the interpretation. "And his power will be mighty, but not through his own power, and he will destroy astoundingly." What is Pope Francis doing these days? He's destroying all holiness, and he's destroying a lot of people in the process. "And he will succeed and practice, and he will destroy the mighty and the holy people." So let's look at Daniel 8, verse 23 a little closer. The scripture reads, "And in the last days of their kingdom, when the transgressors have reached their fullness, the king of fierce expression and understanding dark sentences, skilled in trickery and deception, will stand up." The pastor explained all of this wonderfully in the 8th book of Yisrael, part 1, chapter 31. He said, "Now fierce," let's look over to the side notes. He said it means force, and expression means immoral. So it's forced immorality. Look at what Francis is doing, the Supreme Court decision to legalize same-sex marriage. It's forced immorality. Did you get that? Fierce expression. The fierce means force. The expression means immorality. So, pastor says, they're trying to force people to do away with the laws of Yahweh, the moral laws of Yahweh. That's what it means. And also from the 8th book of Yeshua, part 1, chapter 30, verse 43. Now get this in your head now. He's going to take a stand at that time, or he's going to be elected pope at that time. Write it whichever way you want, but that's what it means. So what pastor is saying here is the king of fierce expression is a pope. And we know now that Francis is on the scene. The king of fierce expression is Pope Francis himself. This next overhead is from Daniel chapter 8, verse 9. And it has to do with some things that this little horn, this king of fierce expression, is going to do. Verse 9, this is from the King James Version. "And out of one of them came forth a little horn, which grew exceedingly great toward the south, toward the east, and toward the land of beauty." Now the words toward the pleasant, the King James Version says toward the pleasant land. Okay, if you look at the word, the Hebrew word 6643, pleasant land, it means in the sense of prominence, in the sense of prominence. Where is the house of Yahweh going to be established in these last days? The chief of the nation. Is Israel a prominent land? Not really. If you took the land mass of the nation of Israel, you could place it within the United States borders 475 times. You could put the nation of Israel inside the borders of Texas 33 times. So is the nation of Israel the land of beauty? When Yahweh is worshipped there, yes it is. But Yahweh's not worshipped there today. This is the prominent land. This is the chief of the nations. And this, so the word, the pleasant land, means a sense of prominence, beautiful. This is, the United States is a beautiful nation, a very diverse, beautiful land. But notice where this word comes from, 6638. It means to amass, that is, grow turgid. Turgid means swollen. Amass, grow turgid, array an army against. And that's exactly what the chief of the nations is doing at this present time. Arraying an army against anyone who doesn't agree with their democratic principles. So this definition here of the pleasant land, it fits the United States. And notice here, if you can see the note there at the bottom, the pleasant land is the chief of the nations, the second beast, the United States of America. This is the pleasant land that Pope Francis visited in his historic visit in September 2015. The nation of Israel would fit inside the United States borders 475 times. Continuing with the vision here and the interpretation that the man of Yahweh gave to Daniel, I'd like to read both the vision and the interpretation. And again, it's color-coded. So let's start with the purple text in purple font in verse 11. Yes, he magnified himself as high as the prince of the host, and by him the daily sacrifice was taken away. Okay, the interpretation of that is, in verse 25, the purple text, he will stand up against the prince of princes, who is Yahshua. That's Yahshua. In the end of Francis's reign, he's going to stand up against Yahshua. But notice, he will be broken without hands. Okay, go back to verse 11 there. Look at the red letters. And the place of the sanctuary was cast down. Now, the interpretation of that is, and by peace will destroy many. So the little horn will by peace destroy many. So hold that thought. And then look at verse 12, the blue text. The vision was, and the host was given him against the daily sacrifice by reason of transgression, and it cast down the truth to the ground, and it practiced and succeeded. Okay, and then the interpretation of that is verse 25, and through the King of Fierce Expressions policy, he will also cause craft, deceit, and fraud to succeed in his hand, and he will magnify himself in his heart. I'd like to read the last two verses of Daniel chapter 8 here. Before we continue, verse 25, and the vision of the evening and morning which was told is true. Therefore, seal up the vision, for it is for many days. 2,300 years is 840,075 days. If you take from the time when Daniel's vision, when he had the vision, until today, it's almost a million days. So certainly that qualifies for many days. And it's for the distant future, his vision. Isaiah 2:2, it will come to pass in the last days that the mountain, the promotion of the house of Yahweh, will be established in the chief of the nations, the pleasant land. And verse 27, then I, Daniel, fainted. He saw all this, and it was pretty much for him to handle. I fainted, and I was sick for a number of days. Afterward, I rose up and performed the king's business, but I was astounded at the vision, but I did not understand it. In Daniel 8, verse 14, the King James Version, where it says, then the sanctuary will be cleansed. The word cleansed is 6663. It means to be or to make right in a moral or forensic sense. It means to cleanse, to clear self. And notice, it means to be turned to righteousness. That's the essence of Daniel's prophecy, to turn the people of Yahweh to righteousness. And the word saint here, which is used in Daniel chapter 8, it means sacred. It means a malek, a saint, a sanctuary. So you see these words saint sanctuary cleansed. In the same context here, the word sanctuary here means a sacred place, but notice it also means to sanctify. The word sanctuary means to sanctify. It means holiness. So sanctuary means holiness. Okay, let's go back to the vision and the interpretation of 11 and 25. Those words, the place of the sanctuary equals many people. And the place of the sanctuary was cast down, and by peace, so the interpretation was, and by peace he will destroy many people. So sanctuary means many people. In Yochanan chapter 2, verse 19, Yeshua answered and said to them, destroy this house, and in 3 days it will be raised up. The Yadim then said, it took 46 years to build this house, and you will raise it up in 3 days? But Yeshua spoke of the house of his body. And then in 1 Corinthians 6, verse 19, or do you not know that your body is the sanctuary of spirit holy? You see the connection there in this prophecy and the cleansing of the sanctuary? Your body is the sanctuary of spirit holy in you, which you have from Yahweh, and you are not your own. For you were bought with a price. Therefore, glorify Yahweh in your body and in your spirit, which are Yahweh's. Yeshua also said in Matthew 3, verse 12, and I'm adding this word purge here because it means cleanse. The word purge means cleanse. Pastor used this in many of his sermons, the word purge here. Matithya 3, verse 12, his winnowing shovel is in his hand, and he will thoroughly purge his floor and gather his wheat into the storehouse, but he will burn up the chaff with unquenchable fire. The word purge there means to cleanse perfectly. And in this next slide, in 2 Timothy 2, verse 19, 2 Timothy 2:19 is another great example of the word purge, meaning cleanse. 2 Timothy 2:19, nevertheless, the foundation of Yahweh stands sure, having this seal, Yahweh knows those who are his, because everyone who reverences the name of Yahweh departs from iniquity. That's what it's all about, departing from iniquity. However, in a great house, this is a great house, this is a great plan that Yahweh has, to bring his saints to perfection in these last days. However, in a great house, there are not only vessels of gold and silver, but of wood and clay, some for honor and some for dishonor. Therefore, if a man purges, cleanses, same meaning, himself of sin, he will be a vessel for honor, sanctified and fit for the Father's use, and prepared for every righteous work. The word purge there, it means to cleanse thoroughly. Just two more overheads to go here. So, the cleansing of the house of Yahweh. The cleansing of the house of Yahweh. 338 BCE, the start of the 2300 years from Daniel's vision. This was the start of the count to the time of the end, when the house of Yahweh would begin to cleanse or to purge. It's the start of it. In 1962, the end of the 2300 years and the start of the cleansing of the house of Yahweh. So, what is the completion of the cleansing of the called out ones of the house of Yahweh? We all want a completion date, right? Yes, Revelation 2, verse 17 gives us that date. Revelation 2, verse 17. He who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the called out ones of the house of Yahweh, to him who overcomes. To him who overcomes, that's the cleansing. That's the completion of the cleansing of the house of Yahweh. To him who overcomes, I will give to eat of the hidden manna, and I will give him a white stone. In other words, a sentence of acquittal. Yahweh gave the prophet Daniel a vision where Daniel saw the end of the kingdom of the Medes and the Persians and the start of the kingdom of the Greeks. From that date in time, 338 BCE, Daniel was shown the time of the end, 2,300 years in the future. The year was 1962, when the world was on the brink of total destruction by means of the nuclear burning that was possible at that time because of the Cuban Missile Crisis between the chief of the nations, the United States, and the Soviet Union. At that critical time in the history of Abilene, Texas, two distant voices crying in the wilderness could be heard on a radio program originating in Eastland, Texas. They heard a question and answer program featuring a man of Yahweh named J.G. Hawkins and his brother, a man of Yahweh named Bill Hawkins. J.G. would ask the questions, and Bill Hawkins would answer them. Here is a sample of what those living in the wilderness called Abilene, Texas, would hear. Please remain seated.
Welcome, everyone. This is Bill Hawkins.
And I'm Bill's older brother, J.G. Hawkins.
And this is the Bible, Truth, and Prophecy Question and Answer Radio Program.
Bill, for our first question today, does our Heavenly Father have a name?
Absolutely. Our Heavenly Father does have a name. The name of the Creator is Yahweh. In Isaiah 42, verse 8, it is written, I am Yahweh, that is my name, and my glory I will not give to another, nor my praise to graven images.
Bill, what day of the week is Yahweh's Sabbath day?
That's an easy one, J.G. The Sabbath is Saturday, the seventh day of the week. The Sabbath begins at sundown Friday evening and ends at sundown on Saturday evening. And remember, in Exodus 31:13, it is written, Speak also to the children of Israel, saying, Surely my Sabbaths you shall keep, for they are a sign between me and you throughout your generations, that you may know that I am Yahweh, who sanctifies you and makes you holy.
Bill, what must mankind do to have salvation?
Well, two things, J.G. First, repent from breaking Yahweh's 613 laws of peace. And secondly, be converted. Remember, for the kingdom of Yahweh is at hand. In Acts 3:19, it says, Repent, therefore, and be converted, that your sins may be blotted out, and times of refreshing may come from the presence of Yahweh. And of course, remember 1 John 3:4, Whoever commits sin transgresses also the law, for sin is the transgression of the law.
Bill, the Bible talks about feast days. Do we need to keep those feast days that are spoken of in the Bible?
Well, J.G., are you aware of what Yahweh inspired to be written in 1 Corinthians 5, 7, and 8?
Bill, could you read that for everyone?
Sure, J.G. It reads like this. 1 Corinthians 5, verse 7. Therefore, purge out. And remember, the word purge means cleanse out. Cleanse out the old leaven, that you may be a new batch, since you are unleavened. For truly, Yeshua, our Passover, was sacrificed for us. Therefore, the answer, J.G., is let us keep the feast. Not with old leaven, neither with the leaven of malice and wickedness, but with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth.
One last question for today's program, Bill. In Daniel's prophecy in chapter 8, how long will be the vision concerning the daily sacrifice, the setting up of the Lord of heaven, and the surrender of the sanctuary and the host to be trampled underfoot?
For 2,300 evenings and mornings, from the time of Daniel's vision until the time of the end, and then the sanctuary will be cleansed. J.G., that means that in the last days, the laws of Yahweh will be taught by the two witnesses, and Yahweh's people will learn how to become righteous and perfect like Yeshua Messiah.
Thanks, Bill, for that explanation of the great prophet Daniel's vision. Well, everyone, that's our program for today. Until our next broadcast,
may Yahweh bless your understanding.
If everyone would please stand. At this time, we turn the services over for closing prayer.